Out. Good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here. Thanks for thanks for tuning in. Last night, one of the topics that came up was the demonstrations around the country today for peace and freedom and justice and things that don't go bump in the night. And one of those events was in Los Angeles. A good friend of ours, Harrison on the Edge. A lot of you people who live in L.A. know this guy. He's on the phone from L.A. Hey, Harrison.
Hey, Mike. Well, you are here, as a matter of fact, not only in spirit, but the hundreds and hundreds of people in front of the federal building really mean it. And a lot of them are your listeners.
Oh, well, bless their hearts. When did this just started, right?
Yeah, this started technically an hour ago, and as people get off of work, more and more showing. And, you know, this is really the heart and soul, the belly button of the federal government for the second largest city in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a big deal. And what'll be interesting to you, I think, is the only mass media here is Telemundo. Let's see. Sort of every foreign station, nobody from the United States, you know, ABC, CBS, NBC.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think that is?
Well, is it icky? I'm not sure.
you don't know why. Let me ask you something, Harrison. I have a friend who lives in Venice, or maybe Santa Monica. I don't know. He works in Santa Monica, but I think he lives in Venice still. He has a little apartment over there. He's been out there for like 25 or 30 years. He's a real political activist for the Peace and Freedom Party. And he called in last night, and when we were talking about these proposed demonstrations around the country, and he said, look, the appropriate response to Obama's escalation of these wars is for everyone against the war to register anti-war third party this week. And then he went on to say, if all the millions who are opposed to these wars do this, register, not independent, register peace and freedom or green, it would send a powerful message that a street demonstration or a march doesn't. Do you agree with that?
Well, you know, the theory of it sounds great. I mean, how many years have you been yelling into action, try this, do that, suit up, show up? You know, it's wonderful to sort of motivate all of us to go do something or even invent a party that actually had some hair and teeth on it. Speaking of hairless and toothless, the Democratic Party today is basically just giving Obama a free pass. Well, you know, he can read and write, and that's better than Bush, but it feels like Bush's third term suddenly.
All of a sudden it does, doesn't it? Well, you know, I tend to agree more at this point in my life with what Gary Gordon said about registering a specific third party. On the other hand, having come up through all the chaos of the 60s and 70s, I know that marches and demonstrations can be effective. I'm burned out, Harrison, but your generation is not. So, you know, while I understand Gary Gordon's position, I certainly understand the energy that can be created from marches and peace vigils and parades and candle vigils and so on and so forth.
Well, yeah, you know, I think Gore Vidal taught us that, you know, agitation actually works. We certainly see it in third world countries, second world and first world, in Europe, in places like Zurich, Switzerland. which are some of the most advanced places on Earth. When the government makes a boo-boo, the people show up en masse and the politicians get afraid.
Well, they do that in France, too. I mean, the French workers periodically bring the whole damn country to a standstill because they're pissed off about a 1% increase in sales tax, which is wonderful. I love to see the French workers say, non, je ne bitito, liberté, fraternité, equality, and hit the streets, you know, and you keep looking over your shoulders where are the guillotines, but
well, there is some light at the end of the tunnel. I'll tell you what it is.
Yeah,
money is no object in this country. $30 billion we didn't have yesterday, poof, there it is.
Yeah,
more when you want it, depending what you want it for. Healthcare, oh no. Things like that, oh no. But fun stuff,
yeah.
You know, they used to say, I don't know what they used to say.
Well, used to say all kinds of stuff. What now? Where does this march go? For anyone who's listening in L.A. on KTLK or Sirius or XM or the internet, you are right now at the Federal Building on where at?
Yeah, we're right on the corner of basically Westwood Avenue and Santa Monica Boulevard. It's the big Federal Building right smack dab at the corner of UCLA, really the center of Los Angeles. And this is where the traffic jam is always the worst this time of day, but somehow it's moving. People have shown up by the hundreds, the bullhorns. People mean it. And you know what? They're quizzed off, I must say.
Yeah, well, good. And I wonder, I'm sure it'll be covered by local television stations tonight in L.A., but you haven't seen any MSNBC or CNN cameras to record this. I take it in the second largest city in America, like yawn. But we know about Tiger Woods' phone call.
Well, absolutely. We know whether or not he's feeling potent that day. I can tell you the various shades of blonde of Paris Hilton's.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm an expert at this stuff. I live here.
Yeah, I know. Yes, you do.
I was hoping that maybe somebody, from NBC, the local, you know, Orange County,
right.
Possibly a Super 8 camera, we can hope.
Have you got any would-be or current politicians who are there to address the crowd and surf on the energy that's being provided?
I haven't seen any yet, but then again, I'm only in the middle of it.
Yeah.
Perhaps on the fringe, there might be some fringy politicians.
Yeah.
It still may be a little too early. I imagine this thing will probably go for a few more hours, remembering that people are just getting, the people who have jobs are just getting off work.
That's
all
true.
All seven of them.
Is it that bad in California, isn't it? Yeah. Oh my God. Where are the Beach Boys when you need them? All right. Listen, if you are able, 2.5 hours from now, and can get through, please give me a call. It's just an update or a final report about what happened. All right.
Will do, and I'll go make nice with the other kids in this sandbox of agitational fun.
That sounds great, Harrison on the Edge. Thanks for checking in, pal.
Bye, my friend.
All right. Take care. Bye. Take care. Be careful. Watch out for tear gas. He substitutes for us once in a while. If you've never heard him on the air, it's quite a program. Harrison on the Edge in L.A. Okay, deep breath. I can never talk to this guy or listen to this guy without getting like out of breath. You know, as soon as I hear Harrison, I don't know. I want to go. I do something. You know what I'm saying? Do you know people like that? You can be just doing fine. You know, you can be reading a novel or working on a paper or something you're writing for an op-ed column or washing your kid, bathing your kid at night or whatever you're doing. And all of a sudden you could just pause and talk to Harrison of Harrison on the Edge, and you want to just lay everything aside and say to your housemate, listen, you put the kid to bed tonight. I've got to go. That's what Harrison does. All right, when we come back, something weird about toy drives around the country being sponsored by the Salvation Army's Angel Tree program. I've had a problem with Salvation Army ever since I became fully aware of their anti-gay policies, but this is even worse. A letter to Joe Sestak, a former admiral in the United States Navy, and now a congressman from the 7th District, in Pennsylvania, written by one of our listeners in Port St. Lucie, Florida. Larry, what else we got tonight? Oh, yeah. General, what's his name? General Eaton, General, Major General Paul Eaton on Chris Matthews' program last night just kicked Dick Cheney's ass up around his shoulders, and rightly so, for some of the things that Cheney has been saying about Barack Obama's dithering. You know, the Cheney-Bush administration corrupted the military, almost destroyed it, if not destroyed it. Left a horrendous messes in terms of wars and death and destruction. And then this rancid son of a bitch, Dick Cheney, has the balls to sit there and criticize Barack Obama because Barack Obama doesn't order 500,000 troops to go commit murder. Have I mentioned yet tonight how much I hate these people?
Don't go to bed angry. Let Mike Malloy do it for you.
Or not. 21 past the hour. Several charities in the Houston, Texas area apparently are checking the immigration status of needy families before they give the kids in those families toys this holiday season. We are turning into a nation of son of a bitches, aren't we? Just total rat selfish bastards, aren't we? I don't care what the unemployment is. I don't care how the economy's crashing. These are kids who look forward to something at least one day out of the year. Whatever. Well, here's the story. The charities involved in this claim that given the jump in demand this year. Well, yeah. And in this case, over 30,000 children have registered with the Salvation Army's Angel Tree program. That's an increase of over 20% from last year. Because of the demand, the jump in demand this year, these charities want to be good stewards and get the donations to people who are in the country legally. The Houston Chronicle reports, quote, in a year when more families than ever have asked for help, several programs providing Christmas gifts for needy children require at least one member of the household to be a U.S. citizen. Others ask for proof of income or rely on churches and schools to suggest recipients. The Salvation Army and a charity affiliated with the Houston Fire Department among those that consider immigration status are asking for birth certificates or Social Security cards for the children. And another one called the Outreach Program requires parents to show photo ID and birth certificates or Social Security cards for the children. Jesus Christ. I mean, you can't celebrate the baby Jesus' birth in this country and get a present unless you're a legal resident. I'll be goddamned. This takes it. This takes it. This absolutely... destroys it. Who is going to show their Social Security card as a proof of, and that's not proof of anything. That doesn't prove that you're a citizen. A driver's license, that doesn't prove you're a citizen. Anyway, Jude, check this out. Jude said, I called our local office in Seattle, the Salvation Army. It was passed on to a coordinator after requesting them to clarify if this was occurring here in Seattle. I was given over to voicemail, where I again asked my question, left name and telephone number. I don't know if she's got an answer. Odd, she writes, and concerning the times we live in, even more concerning when it deals with children. Oh, my God. A simple act of giving a kid, an $8 toy. Come on, we know what's going on this year with fierce competition to get America to spin. It's the birth of your savior. Get out here and buy. That's the cynical part. The non-cynical part or maybe this is just delusional too, but the non-cynical part are little kids who don't get it, who don't understand why everybody around them is speaking what sounds like a foreign language, why their mommy and daddy, maybe can't get a job and have to hide half the time, why there's no money in the house or food, or they don't know about money, but food is hard to come by, and where's auntie, and this and that, and now Christmas is, I know, screw them, go home, right? Get the little rugrats out of here, right? Ah, these little curtain climbers, they don't even speak English. Let me pause for a moment and reorganize my thoughts before I go off on this to the point where I can't get back and the whole show has to end. I'll tell you what let's do. Let's talk with Tony in L.A. Hey, Tony.
Hey, Mike, honey, just calm down. People are just seeing how black-hearted a lot of people are, and all I look at it as is it's just another opportunity for you to go out and try to help somebody.
There
you
go.
You have to look at it.
There you go. I guess
you
so.
You go crazy.
Yeah.
Don't, you know.
For real.
Chill, brother.
Okay.
And I mainly called about the speech last night.
Yes.
My thing is this. If people look... During the campaign, Obama always said he was going to send in more troops.
Yeah, I know. I know. So, and I said that last night. I feel like a fool for sitting here feeling like a fool.
Right.
And I think a lot of liberals or Democrats or progressives or whatever feel the same way. But there was something about him that represented hope. Maybe it's because he was such a groundbreaking president. I don't know.
Right.
But I expected him, like I said last night, to turn things around, and that's not going to happen.
It's not. I mean, not in that sense. At least he gave a timetable. At least he didn't give them as many as they wanted. I mean, we got to look at it. If you already said earlier, you know, when you start looking at the military-industrial complex, he didn't create it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes I kind of think it's almost like basketball. Everybody think they can throw him a bad pass and he's going to be Michael Jordan.
That's true.
And, you know, turn flips or whatever. We got to look at the real deal of who's really running this stuff, and he's doing the best that he can. And the other thing... You
hey,
know,
listen.
I mean,
hold on a second, Tony. I got a break here, and I want you to get to that other thing. So just hold on a minute. I'll come back right after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Stick around. We have miles to go before we sleep.
Someday it's going to come. Someday it's going to come. Someday. Someday. Someday it's going to come.
I've been crying lately, thinking about the world as it is. Why must we go on hating? Why can't we live in bliss?
You're listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
It is 25 before the hour. Apparently we're having some problems, people hearing the callers, the volume stuff. I apologize for that. We will we'll get another engineer out here to check our equipment. It's awful, isn't it? All right, we're talking with Tony in L.A. All right, what was the other thing?
What else did I want to say? Honey, I'm getting old, Mike. I can't remember.
All right,
I know.
All right, go ahead.
I wanted to say something about Tiger Woods.
Tiger Woods, yeah.
Kind of trans from one black man to another. So Tiger don't know he's black. But he knows now, because who else would get a ticket hitting a tree on their own property? Somebody was looking out the window at 2 o'clock in the morning to call the police.
You know, I do not understand. I don't care if they're black or white. Politicians, sports figures, these Hollywood stars, these people, men, who have these gorgeous wives. They've got the whole world in their hands, so to speak. And they're out messing around like this. And what kind of a fool, I'm sorry, Tiger, what kind of a fool calls up the girlfriend and says, you know, would you get your name on my wife?
Right.
You know, my wife went through, blah, blah, blah. You know that's going to wind up in the tabloid hands.
Mm-hmm.
You know that these women who sleep with the big time politicians or stars or sports figures,
mm-hmm.
you know they're not there because they think, oh yeah, he's going to leave his wife and kids and come marry
right.
me and we're going to live happily ever after. You know it's
mm-hmm.
a scam and a game. I don't get this. I never have.
Either.
Oh, well.
My whole thing was I just didn't know how hitting your tree in your own yard got you where you coming out with a statement that you cheated. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not taking up for him.
No, I hear you.
I'm just kind of like, how do you connect the dots? I don't get
Well, that. All over the country, DWB is something that black men deal with. So,
oh,
you know.
Well, you know that. Well, like I said, he know he black now.
He does. Thanks, Tony.
Like Kamala Nation. All right, see you.
All right, Tony. Take care. Take care. And that's all we're going to talk about, the whole Tiger Woods thing. That's it. I'm glad Tony brought it up because I don't want to pretend like, oh, I'm not paying attention. You can't avoid that story. You know, one minute it's the kid in that was not in the Mylar balloon. The next minute is this freakish couple that get past Secret Service and go into the dinner for the Indian Prime Minister. Then it's Tiger Woods' car wreck. Turns out to be, you know, the portal through which every single, seriously now, if you watch any television today, how many times did you hear that tape? How many times, right? We don't have it. All right, let's forget it. Thanks for bringing it up, though, Tony. Larry in Port St. Lucie, Florida, got, it's more or less a form email for sure from Joe Biden. Vice President, and it's addressed to Larry. It says, Lawrence, last night President Obama laid out his plan to defend our national interests by refocusing our efforts on three clear goals: defeating Al Qaeda, stabilizing Pakistan, and breaking the Taliban's momentum in Afghanistan. To achieve these goals, President's authorized rapid deployment of 30,000 more troops. Blah 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 blah. Please take a moment to listen to President Obama outline his plan and pass this along to anyone you know who wants to learn more. And then he included in this Joe Biden form letter, there's a link to the audio and the video from last night. Okay. Well, Larry in Port St. Lucie, Florida, answers Joe. He writes, Joe, respectfully, an answer to your message. Below is a copy of an email I sent to Admiral/Congressman Joe Sestak, who supports your administration in this matter. This is what Larry wrote to Sestak. Regarding Afghanistan troop increase, Admiral, I'm a former United States Air Force major and Vietnam veteran. Sir, respectfully, aside from the fact that we simply and clearly cannot afford this, quote, war, end quote, economically, is anybody adequately taking into consideration the fact that our conventional ground and air forces are being ground into dust by overutilization, exhaustion, and equipment attrition? Please help me understand, sir, why this doesn't seem to frighten you as much as it scares the hell out of me. Am I wrong in assuming that if a real, quote, enemy force showed up on our doorstep tomorrow, that we would be, aside from our nuclear arsenal, essentially defenseless? Remind me, sir, how many men and women do Russia and China have under arms as we speak? Thank you for your very kind attention. Larry, and his last name, Port St. Lucie, Florida. That's what he wrote to Admiral Joe Sestak, who is also a congressman now, retired admiral. From Pennsylvania's 7th District, which includes the Philadelphia suburbs. Yeah, we don't see nobody talks about that. And if you listened to Obama last night, as I'm sure you did, you didn't hear any reference to veterans. You didn't hear any, well, the passing rhetorical nonsense that every politician does, but the reference to the depleted U.S. military here at home. National Guard, for God's sake, has been federalized for how many years now, thanks to this filthy Bush crime family. The other night, the night before, Obama went on television last night, Dick Cheney, slammed Obama for projecting what Cheney called weakness to adversaries. And he warned, Cheney warned, this rotten son of a bitch, Dick Cheney, warned that more workaday Afghans, according to Politico.com, workaday Afghans will side with the Taliban if they think the United States is heading for the exits. Now, first of all, that is illogical, totally illogical. If the invader in your country leaves and says he's going to leave and gets out, why would you side with people in your country who, according to the conventional wisdom, as soon as the invader leaves, is going to reimpose these crazed, sick religious strictures on your entire society? It makes no sense. But Cheney is a sick son of a bitch who belongs in the psychiatric ward of a maximum security prison. That's where he belongs. Cheney said the president's so-called agonizing about Afghan strategy, quote, has consequences for the forces in the field, end quote. Cheney said, quote, I begin to get nervous when I see the commander-in-chief making decisions apparently for what I would describe as small p political reasons, where he's trying to balance off different competing groups in society. Cheney goes on, every time he delays, defers, debates, changes his position, begins to raise questions. Is the commander-in-chief really behind what they've been asked to do? End quote. What a son of a bitch. What a dirty, slimy worm this guy is. Every time he delays, defers, debates, changes his position. He didn't change his position. How many emails did I get today, Kathy, pointing out to me from progressives and liberals and a few conservatives, look, Malloy, he never changed his position. What are you wetting your pants about? He always said he was going to follow through on Afghanistan. So what's Cheney talking about? Cheney is a sick bastard. He is a sick man, a murderously sick man. And like I said, he belongs inside a maximum security prison in the psychiatric ward to stay there forever. Cheney rejected any suggestion, this is all according to Politico.com, Cheney rejected any suggestion that Obama had to decide on a new strategy for Afghanistan because the one that employed by the previous administration failed. Cheney was asked if he thinks the Bush administration bears any responsibility for the disintegration of Afghanistan because of the attention resources that were diverted to Iraq. And he replied, I basically don't. Son of a bitch. I mean, anybody above 14 years old who's been following this understands clearly what happened in Afghanistan vis-a-vis Iraq, vis-a-vis the incompetence, the corruption of the Bush crime family. All right. That was the day before the speech. Yesterday, on Chris Matthews, on Tweety Bird's Hardball show, he interviewed Major General Paul Eaton. He's the retired Army general who kicked Dick Cheney's sorry ass a few weeks ago. But here are some quotes from the interview, and Sharon Gordy, our military affairs correspondent, sent this in. General Eaton said, quote, I will not speak for the General Officer Corps, but I will speak for the bright peers that I have who, for having witnessed the Bush administration and the Republican Party, the damage done to the armed forces of the United States from the last 8 years, anybody who blindly endorses the Republican Party, particularly the Republican Party that we have today, is just not a thinking American. The Republican Party has done more damage to the armed forces of the United States than any party in my memory. End quote. Major General Paul Eaton. Who's he? West Point graduate, 72. Commanding General of the Army Infantry Center. Went to Iraq, where he's in charge of training Iraqi military in 2003 and 2004. Of course, he wasn't provided with what he needed to accomplish that. One of the first retired generals to criticize Rumsfeld publicly. His two sons are in the Army and have served in the current wars in the Middle East. His father, an Air Force pilot, was lost over Laos in 1969 on a bombing run, and his remains weren't discovered or recovered until a few years ago. So, Major General Paul Eaton certainly has the credentials to call Dick Cheney and the Republican Party a bunch of filthy, sneaking bastards. And good for him for doing it. But let me give you the quote one more time. anybody, anybody who blindly endorses the Republican Party is just not a thinking American. The Republican Party has done more damage to the armed forces of the United States than any party in my memory. End quote.
Defining anger management. It's Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. I just got an email here that there's a guy that writes to me a lot. He lives in Hollywood. His name is William. You know, he writes at least once a show, and they're usually very brief, just to comment on what I'm talking about. And he signs it William from Hollywood. And I think he's about my age. And I just got this email. Subject line, I'm writing in for William from Hollywood. I am his wife. He asked me to email in. He decided today to head off to the federal building where Harrison is. He is armed with his worn, no-war black armbands and worn-out old army boots. He's traveling via the bus system with a beat-up cell phone. He went with a battered AM pocket radio to listen to your show if it's airing on KTLK. This keeps him sane. He said this is his last protest of the many that he's been involved in. And then it's signed by his wife. Man, oh, man. Well, William, if you can hear the show on your battered AM radio, bless your heart. I think he wrote to me and said he had just turned 60 or... And if I remember, you know, he's a veteran. He served, I think, during the Vietnam era. And regarding the toys for tots, the kids that whose parents are now being asked to prove that their kid is legitimate or legal or whatever, Kate in the desert writes, and Mike, I was asked to do that very thing in Mississippi the last 2 years. Kate goes down to where the hurricane tore through everything and the flooding and still, you know, helps people down there. She says, I was asked to do the very same thing in Mississippi the last 2 years. The parents were supposed to fill out a long form. Never mind, a lot of the people couldn't read, and they had been filling out paperwork since Katrina blew through. This screening was for freaking junky Chinese toys from Wally World, for Christ's sake, pun intended. I was aghast. When I objected, my white coworkers gave the typical racist reasons. They said, well, some people abuse the system. I simply pushed the paperwork into a drawer and dropped the subject. I refused to participate in such an ugly mess. What a sad place we have come to in our society. Kate in the desert. You know, a cynic most of the time, which I am, and a non-believer where it concerns religion, which I am. But... you know, I know the society I live in, and to me, Christmas is it's you know, strictly a pagan slash secular holiday that was co-opted by the early Christians. I like the celebration of the winter solstice. The fact that the early Christians said, "Well, we're going to steal that and make it Christ's birthday," even though it's utterly nonsense, utter nonsense to think that somebody was born out in the desert in December in the Middle East. You know, it actually can snow there, but never mind. I like it. You know what I like about it? I like the lights and the parties and the camaraderie and the friends getting together and the holly and the ivy. All those parts of Christmas that are sung about in Deck the Halls. Deck the Halls is a purely pagan song. I mean, it stays completely away from any religious connotation at all. It's strictly pagan. And I love it. It's my favorite Christmas carol because it's so happy, joyful, right? And over the course of their lives, you know, I've tried to share it with my kids. And now that we have a 5-year-old, Kathy and I have a 5-year-old, she really looks forward to all the fun and the parties and the hanging out and the lights and the singing. And here comes Santa Claus, you know, and just on and on and on. And, last weekend, Kathy put out, our Christmas lights. I won't say we, because I don't climb up on ladders on, 25, 30, 40 feet above the ground anymore. She still can. but we have a three-story, one, two, three, four stories. It's four stories, isn't it? From the basement to the attic, it's four stories. It's a big old house, and she gets up there and hangs lighted Christmas wreaths under every window. And we noticed this year that if you count the one on the back gate that heads out to the woods, there's 13 of these up there. If you count the ones on the house, there's 12, and there's 12 days of Christmas. Isn't that cool? But she puts these lights up, and then up at the top of our drive, there are two pine trees that she planted 10 years ago. And now they're probably, I don't know, what would you say, 8 feet tall, 7-8 feet tall, about that? And now all the lights are white. And I'm telling you, man, when it gets dark here in the foothills of North Georgia Mountains, it gets dark about 5:30 this time of year, and those lights go on because she has them on timers. Woo! I mean, it is so pretty. It is just gorgeous. And it is that whole pagan thing about the sun is disappearing. The sky monster is eating the sun. We got to get the sun back. Quick, light the bonfires, light the lights, sing songs, dance, have a good time, drink and eat and party and jump and run. It's bad enough that it was stolen. It's even worse that now this degenerate kind of winter solstice celebration that is practiced in this country is now demanding, and I bet it won't be from white people, demanding to see, especially if someone shows up who has a Spanish accent or speaks Spanish, well, let me see proof that your child is really an American or no toy. Sounds like that goddamn soup Nazi on Seinfeld, huh? No toy for you! It's 7 past the hour. Let me start the hour by saying there are two sides to every story, as you know. Today, those who share Sarah Palin's hate-filled politics have the number one best-selling book in America to present their case. And, of course, they have Limbaugh and Ann Coulter and Fox News to promote it. On the other side, that's where we are. Our resources are a little less powerful, but we have a highly entertaining solution. If you want to show your opposition to everything that Palin stands for and enjoy what the Huffington Post calls a superb, engaging read from start to finish, have I got the book for you. The title, of course, you know what this is, Going Rouge, Sarah Palin, An American Nightmare. It's been put together by two of the senior editors at The Nation magazine and has some of the best writing on Palin, including contributions by Naomi Klein, Katrina Vandenheuvel, Matt Taibbi, Eve Ensler, Frank Rich, Katha Pollitt, and Tom Frank. Now, you can order it as a paperback or as an ebook from the link at my website, MikeMalloy.com. It makes a great holiday gift, too. So don't let the neocons have the Tea Party all themselves. Get Going Rouge today and get it. If you're going to get it, go to MikeMalloy.com and get it, okay? Because it gives us points if you do that. All right, before we go back to your calls, three quickies here from Roz regarding, the Christmas thing. We're there. And Roz writes, I wonder whether Jesus asked recipients of his miracles whether or not they were Palestinian or Hebrews or Romans before he cured them. And regarding those bastards where the children, I put in the word bastards, where the children are concerned, Roz says, do they even know what Christmas stands for? Boggles the old mind once again, Mike. Yeah. Was it George W. Bush who said if English was good enough for the Savior, he was good enough, good enough for me? Who's this from? Irish Dave writes, Mike, so according to the Salvation Army, Jesus Christ, his own self, doesn't get no presents on account of not having a birth certificate. P.S. Does the Salvation Army accept non-U.S. coins or currency? The Chinese yuan, for example? Only he spells it J-U-A-N. Irish Dave is just funny as hell. I wonder if Irish Dave's is really... Reverend, who is the street preacher Kathy used to call us from Memphis? Reverend Sky Blue. I wonder what happened to him. Irish Dave writes the way Reverend Sky Blue talked. Remember him? If you're a regular listener to this program, you know what I'm talking about. And John in Los Angeles writes, millions of people are not aware that the Salvation Army is not a charity. It is a fundamentalist church that happens to do charitable work, but much of what they do is conditional on the recipients being bombarded with their religious dogma. They regularly refuse to help those who will not listen to their religious views before they get any assistance. This is especially true with their homeless outreach. If they couldn't preach their religion to these people, they would not help them. It's a carrot they dangle in order to preach to them. Once I realized this, I've never given to them again. I have no intention of supporting their teaching of false religion and their selective assistance to those in need. There are thousands of other organizations that do charitable work that need contributions too, and they don't harass those who they try to help. John in Los Angeles. Yeah, I know. Nothing is ever what it seems to be, is it? Nothing. Ever. Anita is in Minneapolis listening on KTNF. Hey, Anita.
Hello, Malloy.
Hi.
Something about Afghanistan that I don't think has gotten enough attention is that about the CIA bribing the Afghan tribesmen with Viagra. Have you heard about that?
The CIA.
Honest to God.
No, wait. The CIA doing what?
Bribing the tribesmen.
Bribing them with Viagra?
Yeah. Just so they can pass through the land, their land.
Where did you hear this?
I read it in our local paper.
I'm sorry. You read it where?
In our local paper, and I threw it away, and I knew I should have saved it. Dang it.
With Viagra.
Yeah. Because, like, they have four more wives. Some of them have four more wives, and he was saying about how they're elderly and stuff.
Yeah.
And they bribe them with them.
Well, you know those commercials, now I hope you can handle this, you know those commercials that say, in case of an erection that lasts more than 4 hours, consult your doctor. What the hell are they going to do in some tribal area of Afghanistan where there are no doctors?
They're sick, man. They are some sick-minded, people.
The CIA or the Afghan tribesmen?
No, the CIA.
Right.
Come on.
All right. Well, Anita, I could have gone all night without hearing that story, but thank you. I appreciate it, okay?
I just wanted to know if you heard it.
I have not, but if you ever track it down, send me a link.
I will.
All right. Thanks, Anita. Oh, my. That. What? Wouldn't surprise my producer a bit. Well. Oh, my God. This person writes into me, not to be critical, but you murdered the Sarah Palin book title. It's pronounced Rogue. And it's spelled Rogue. I don't know. You didn't sign your name. This is KQP 1968. You ought to wake up and smell the coffee, sir or ma'am. The book I'm talking about is Going Rouge. It's deliberately a play on going rogue. Oh, never mind. I can't believe this, Kathy. It's pronounced rogue and it's spelled R-O-G-U-E and not rouge like you pronounced it. I'm not talking about Sarah Palin's book, Sir or Madam. I'm talking about the parody of Sit. Oh, never mind. What's the point? David is in Pittsburgh, listening online. Hey, David.
Hey.
I
don't know if you covered this before I got onto your programmer tonight, but, you know, I wanted to talk to you something about Obama. You know, supposedly we have secret prisons in Afghanistan. He said
right.
There weren't going to be any more of them.
Right, he did, didn't he?
The cost of the war is we have 100,000 Blackwater mercenaries in Pakistan, and that budget is secret. He said there's going to be open about the budget on the war. That's a secret budget.
Well, we're not sure how many mercenaries. We do know they're there. Did you hear the latest? Eric Prince, the former CEO, because I think he's bailing out of Blackwater, now called XE. Eric Prince is a CIA operative. He's been operating with government money, that's our money, with the taxpayer dollars. He's been working for the CIA inside Pakistan, murdering people.
Well, you know, like the Nation just did a bid on it, and they said there were 100,000 Blackwater mercenaries in Pakistan. You know, and right now in this country, the state of war is like a normal thing, and it should be not that.
Mm-hmm.
And we got used to it.
Yeah.
I just wanted to mention a few. The Blackwater, I mean, Al-Qaeda and the Taliban, though, were fighting in Pakistan.
Right.
It's a throwback to Cambodia.
Right.
Where the only people that didn't know about it were us.
And that's because we're not supposed to know the truth. If we knew all the truth, we would demand our government stop.
So what is this business about how we're supporting Obama? He's lying to us just the way Nixon did.
It's starting to become obvious that is the case. Yeah, yeah.
If the rest of the world knows it, but we're not told in this country, the citizens aren't told about it. And I think he's just as bad as this is so discouraging that there is just seems to be absolutely no. You know, we put him in office. We brought him to the dance.
Mm-hmm.
And he is stabbing us in the back with everything he's doing is a lie. Secret prisons that aren't there. No one's allowed to visit the prisoners. He said no more of that.
David, I hear you. I agree. I don't know why President Obama is becoming Bush light. I don't know. Thanks, David. I got a boogie.
But I still believe what makes a man really has a chance. You gotta stand for something or you'll fall for anything. You've got to be your own man, not a puppet on a string. Never compromise what's right and opposed.
The Mike Malloy Show. You are now entering a flying monkey free zone.
At the state of the world that we live in, where no one gives a damn about
21 past the hour. Okay, here's something for you. The the Chinese news agency Xinhua has a story about the demonstrations in Los Angeles at the federal building, only they're not talking about what's going on tonight. They're talking about what was going on last night. The Xinhua news agency writes, hours before President Barack Obama announced his decision Tuesday to send more troops to Afghanistan, activists from labor and anti-war organizations gathered in front of the federal building in Los Angeles to oppose his war strategy. And then the article goes on. So, yeah, it's getting some coverage from the Chinese news agency. And as far as the Viagra and the Afghans, yes, 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 to the caller from in Minnesota, listening on KTNF, December 26th of last year, Washington Post had a big article about it, and somebody sent this to me. Let me just read the first two sentences. The Afghan chieftain looked older than his 60-odd years, and his bearded face bore the creases of a man burdened with duties as tribal patriarch and husband to four younger women. His visitor, a CIA officer, saw an opportunity and reached into his bag for a small gift, four blue pills, Viagra. The officer said, "Take one of these, you'll love it. Compliments of Uncle Sam." And it goes on from there. So I did... Oh, my God. And apparently it was widely reported. Now, what's this? Matt writes in, yeah, it was all over the place. Okay, so I missed it. And thanks to everybody for sending it in. Oh, my God. How many emails am I going to get about that? Okay. I had no idea. Never heard of it. Ron sent this in last night after Obama's speech. Ron, who is still lost in PA, he writes, "Mike, I'm not a fool for the most part, nor am I a pushover or a hard ass for that matter. But I didn't have the room left to listen to the person we elected to the presidency laugh in our effing faces, because I'm not one that can justify killing if it involves children or innocent people under any circumstances. It's just murder to me. And as this concerns our military, as a veteran myself, that seems to be what this 30,000 troop surge is really all about. But who cares, right? Certainly not us. For as a nation, we've lost the ability to tell the truth, to express empathy, or correct our wrongs with dignity and justice. We are a pallid, empty people with no respect for life. Beyond decadent, we are profane and sadistic. For to do nothing against such blatant atrocities as those that have happened in the Middle East for the last decade, all committed in our name, is murder by proxy. So I expected Obama's speech would be little better than his dispassionate eulogy of a corporate yes man. So damn him. He's a damned liar, like his fraudulent predecessor. And damn the American people's cowardice for not standing up to tyranny, a tyranny that will take more lives from people who have no greater desire than to just go about their business unmolested, while we go about ours, self-absorbed, acting as if nothing is wrong." Yeah, you know, Ron, lost in PA. Yeah, you know, I often wonder how we do that. I only wonder how I do it. You know, I'm an American. I remember what Warren Buffett said one time famously, that everything he is, you know, the billionaire, multi-billionaire, richest person in the universe, he said, "The only reason I have what I am, and I am what I am," I'm paraphrasing, "is because of the accident of birth. I was born in this society. I was born an American. And that's why I've accumulated what I've accumulated." Now, I totally butchered that quote, but you know what I'm saying. Okay, that's all well and good. And I guess anyone who enjoys the greedy monetary success that a Warren Buffett has enjoyed, you know, can say that, I guess. I can't think of any other society necessarily where you can do that. You can do what he did, Warren Buffett. But I always thought his company, his investment company, sounded like a shirt company. What is it, something Hathaway? I thought it was a shirt. Anyway, by the same time, you know, the flip side of that is for those of us who are not wealthy, never will be, who, and a lot of us have no desire to be, you know, as long as there's a few bucks for the mortgage payment and go to a flick once in a while, I guess, you know, I don't know. But the flip side of Warren Buffett's declaration is to understand fully and completely, and then what do you do once you understand it, the atrocities that are committed in our name. And that's where denial comes in. You know, that's where that great defense mechanism, denial. I don't know anything about it. I'm not involved in it. I didn't do anything. I didn't know there were death camps. I didn't know the Fuhrer was doing that. I have no idea. I know nothing. We'll be back.
Liberal with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's Mike Malloy.
Before the hour. Steny Hoyer, the House Majority Leader, had kind of a zinger for these bastards, the Bush bastards, and, you know, especially provoked by some of the statements Cheney's been making lately. You know, it's one thing to fault the continuing war policies of Barack Obama. It's something else, again, to stand silent while these murderous bastards who set this whole thing up, including the attack on this country, are allowed to sit on the sidelines now and bitch and moan and complain and criticize when, after all, it was their war, right? Wars. Anyway, Steny Hoyer lashed out at the Bush crime family's handling of the situation in Afghanistan, saying the Bush officials abandoned the effort there. We all know that. Anyway, Steny Hoyer told reporters, I think it was yesterday, quote, "Frankly, they turned tail." That's pretty tough language, but I get angry when I hear the vice president, former vice president, talking about a job that they started but didn't finish and was worse in 2008 in December than it was 6 years previous, with a resurgent Taliban, resurgent Al-Qaeda, and a very difficult situation in Pakistan. I don't necessarily agree with some of what Steny Hoyer said, but I do agree with the tone and tenor of how he said it. You know, the nerve of these bastards. The nerve of these Bush crime family pigs. Oh, well. Time for a report from Prairie 2, our economic affairs correspondent, who writes, Thursday, tomorrow, is the big White House jobs summit. Yawn. Everybody will be there. Business wants their taxes cut. They especially want to quit paying into Social Security and cut the minimum wage so they can hire more slaves, I mean workers. They wouldn't mind a handout from the government directly, or at least cut the capital gains tax. 50% is too much, they say, when they sell their factory to China. They want to be able to do it completely tax-free. Unions will be there, but you'd need someone who can talk to ghosts to hear anything they have to say. This summit will largely be kabuki theater, because the only thing that would bring back jobs is a complete reversal of everything that's been done by the government since 1980. But Obama's advisors that were recycled from the Clinton administration believe in doing everything with monetary policy. The big advantage is that almost nobody realizes what they're doing. They may be able to produce a large prosperity bubble like Clinton did, although it would be much more obvious how hollow it is. Indeed, job losses are starting to ease, but the boom and bust cycles come faster every time this is done. They seem to think all they have to do is convince people that everything will be all right. We aren't in free fall in U.S. retail sector right now, largely from pent-up demand. Electronic sales are up as the people who still have money are making replacement equipment purchases that they've been putting off, but sales of everything else are flat at best, and most sectors are way down, despite a massive campaign by retailers to lure shoppers. The Federal Reserve is running PSAs on the responsible use of credit cards, as if people still had any credit line to spend. State and local governments are forcing unions to take pay cuts to maintain full employment. The Republican talking point is that unions will expect something in return and that jobs should have been cut instead. Fire them on Christmas Eve, if at all possible. Bah, humbug. Prairie 2. And it's the current issue of, thanks, Bruce, it's the current issue of Vanity Fair that has a story about Blackwater's Eric Prince recruited as a CIA agent in the years after the 9/11 attacks. That's according to this report of Vanity Fair. Also reveals that this billionaire ex-Navy guy plans to step down from Blackwater to teach high school. Adam Suralski, writing at Vanity Fair, says, for the past 6 years, Prince appears to have led an astonishing double life. Publicly, he has served as Blackwater CEO and chairman. Privately and secretly, has been doing the CIA's bidding, helping to craft, fund, and execute operations ranging from inserting personnel into so-called denied areas, places U.S. intelligence has trouble penetrating, to assembling hit teams targeting al-Qaeda members and their allies. End quote. Suralski also reports that Prince became a CIA asset or spy who became a Mr. Fix-It in the War on Terror. It goes on. Suralski also says the following in the article. Prince told Vanity Fair that he believes that people inside the U.S. government sold him out when news of Blackwater's involvement in the CIA's secret assassination program went public. Last summer, CIA Director Leon Panetta informed congressional intelligence committees that the CIA had kept secret an on-and-off assassination program that many people believe was during the Bush administration run by Dick Cheney. Later, news reports emerged alleging that Blackwater was involved in the program which sought to assassinate terrorist targets. Prince, Vanity Fair reports, confesses to feeling betrayed. He says, I don't understand how a program this sensitive leaks, and to out me on top of it. So Adam Suralski goes on, quote, Prince blames Democrats in Congress for the leaks and maintains that there's a double standard at play. Prince says, quote, the left complained about how CIA operative Valerie Plame's identity was compromised for political reasons. A special prosecutor was even appointed. Well, what happened to me was worse. Oh, poor baby. People acting for political reasons disclosed not only the existence of a very sensitive program, but my name along with it. End quote. As in the Plame case, though, the leaks prompted CIA attorneys to send a referral to the Justice Department requesting that a criminal investigation be undertaken to identify those responsible for providing highly classified information to the media. And it goes on. It's in the current issue of Vanity Fair. And the quick takeaway for me from this article, the bit that I've read, is that Eric Prince doesn't see any kind of disparity in the two stories. Valerie Plame was not running an assassination team. She had her own assets working within Iran, trying to get information on Iran's nuclear program, valuable, truthful information. And she was outed by these rat bastards in the Bush crime family because her husband had probably inadvertently revealed a truth that the Bush crime family didn't want revealed. And that was that everything they were saying was a goddamn lie about Iraq. Everything. And it was Joe Wilson, her husband, who revealed the lies about the so-called yellow cake uranium coming from Niger. Eric Prince, on the other hand, has been running a hit squad, murdering people, extrajudicial execution. We're not at war. We haven't issued a declaration of war. And even if we have, is this what we do? These are people that Eric Prince was told, go kill these people because, or have your team go kill these people because, you know, they're a terrorist. And you have to wonder, did Eric Prince say, oh, well, show me the evidence before I order people to commit murder, which makes me a co-conspirator, which means that I would go to prison for life or be executed. There are people in the United States prison system awaiting execution for being conspirators to murder, even if they didn't pull the trigger. But you see, we, as we have, that has been pointed out to us many times, we've talked about in this program, you know, the United States is the single largest terrorist organization in the history of the human race. Come on. Come on. I'm not just talking about the CIA and the DSI and all these other clandestine organizations that go out and zap people simply because they're in the way of corporate America. I'm talking also about the overt policies, not just the covert, but the overt policies. The World Bank, International Monetary Fund, which are ours, that will say to a country in South America, you know, we made loans to you, and now that your economy is collapsing and you can't pay back the loans, here's what we want you to do. Stop educating your young people. Stop feeding your hungry people. Stop providing housing to your poor people and pay us our goddamn money. And a couple of countries in South America said, F you, are you out of your minds? And went default. What does that mean? They went default. They didn't pay their bill. Does that mean who gets burned? Who get, you know, the Federal Reserve just prints more money. Come on, let's stop playing the goddamn game. Is there any way we could do that, you and I at least? This is a bunch of bull and you know it. And I know it too. What I just talked about. Eric Prince is whining and bitching and wetting his pants about, well, what about Valerie Plame? They appointed a special prosecutor to find out who leaked her name. And okay, so your case has been referred, Eric, you poor little bastard. I mean, this is just disgusting. Here's a guy who has committed all the crimes he's committed. And don't give me this bull snot. You know, he's a religious fundamentalist, just exactly what Mikey Weinstein was talking about on this program last night. He's a religious Christian fundamentalist who is not out assassinating or working with people to assassinate Muslim leaders because they're terrorists, but because they're Muslim leaders. Let's stop playing semantic games. Let's stop. Come on. Let's be adults. Can we do that? No. Christ, no, we can't do that. If we could.
Redefining anger management. It's Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. Sorry for that abrupt break there at the last commercial break. I just was not looking at the clock, and I thought Kathy was frantically waving her arms because a mosquito had got in the house. But anyway, quick break, and here we are back again. I forget what the hell I was talking about. Gerald is in Detroit, listening on XM. Hey, Gerald.
Hi, Mike.
Hey.
Well, I was calling in response to something where someone said they didn't know why Obama was acting the way he was politically.
Mm-hmm.
There's a website called the Political Compass. I believe it's Political Compass on politicalcompass.org.
Mm-hmm.
but don't quote me at the moment for the exact URL.
Mm-hmm.
Back during the primaries, they had a list, or they had a chart up, dividing everything into four quadrants by authoritarian versus libertarian and right and left.
Yeah.
And all the candidates for the U.S. presidency, with the exception of Ralph Nader and Denis Kucinich, were in the authoritarian right quadrant.
Yeah, I saw that. I did see that graph.
So that's the only section of the possible political spectrum that are ever taken seriously for candidates.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think the reason for that, and I'm sure you know this, Gerald, the reason for it is the selection process is determined before these candidates for the United States presidency ever become candidates for that office. They have to work their way up through the system, either as a governor of a state or a member of a legislature. They work their way up. And the only way they get elected to those higher offices is by ass-kissing corporate America in order to get the money necessary to do, to win these elective offices or steal them, until they finally get to the point where there's been enough ass-kissing and enough money collected that they can go ahead and launch a presidential campaign. So a lot of people say, well, Malloy, you're crazy. And all you other people that say this, you know, the corporate America didn't pick John McCain and Barack Obama. And the answer to that is, the hell they didn't. Of course they did. Maybe not in that particular moment. I mean, the heads of the 10 largest corporations in America didn't have a meeting and say, as the presidential season began, let's pick Barack Obama and let's pick John McCain. They don't have to do that because it's self-selecting. The system is designed to keep people like Ralph Nader or Denis Kucinich from ever getting to the point where they can seriously be considered a candidate for the presidency. So, yeah, you're right. The graph was right. And that's how our system works. I don't know. This is why I fall back into kind of a cynical mode sometimes. I don't know how to break that unless, like Gary Gordon said the other night, stop messing around and break away from these two corrupt political parties, and declare yourself to be a member of the Peace and Justice Party or a member of the Green Party and work accordingly.
Well, that's one thing I've thought about doing. I've also put some thought into trying to work my way into local political parties just to get some other message out.
Mm-hmm.
Just to see if I can do something on the local level.
Well, good for you. All politics is local. I don't know who said that, but it's true. Maybe it was Huber Humphrey. I don't know, but that's a good thing to do, and I certainly respect that. Gerald, thanks for checking in. Okay.
All right.
All right. Take care. Yeah, I tried to do that about 10 years ago. No, when was it, Kathy? About 15 years ago, running for the Georgia General Assembly, House of Representatives here. That went over like a pork chop at a bar mitzvah, didn't it? Thud. It just went nowhere. But, I get emails occasionally when people say, you've declared yourself, Malloy, to be a Democrat forever, no matter what happens to the Democratic Party. So how can you be talking about third party? Well, that's not so hard to sort through. You know, I was brought up as a Democrat. Neither of my parents ever sat me down and said, you are going to be a member of the Democratic Party, and here's why. It was just from growing up where I grew up and seeing what I saw and processing all that through my own, little life experience. I just decided I was a Democrat. Just like deciding to drop the references to a deity, that was just a matter of working through the process. Nobody ever sat me down. Christopher Hitchens didn't send me an email and say, hey, Mike, listen, we got to talk about this religious stuff. No, just a matter of evolution, so to speak. So I'll always be a Democrat, large D Democrat. I just won't vote Democrat anymore. What's the point? You understand what I'm saying? Sure you do. You understand what I'm saying. It's too frustrating. It's very frustrating. I've had people for the past 20 years try to point that out to me. Why do you keep voting Democrat? Why do you keep doing that, Malloy? You know, and I've gone on the air many times and said, you know, support these different parties in the primaries. I voted for Kucinich in the primary here in Georgia. Oh, Jesus God. Yeah, I did. And I've also said, well, but then during the general election, vote for the whoever the Democrat is. I don't mean that I advocated that. I didn't tell anybody to do that. I don't tell people to do things. But that's what I said I was going to do. Was vote for Kucinich, vote for the guy I thought that I wanted to be president of the United States. And then vote in the General Assembly, or I'm sorry, in the general election for the person who the Democrats wound up nominating. And obviously that doesn't work, because by then it's already corrupted. So it's kind of weird, you know, you pay your money and takes your chance. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Report was included a reference to the jobs conference coming up tomorrow at the White House. The White House jobs conference. Sam in West Virginia emails in, Mike, two of the Nobel Prize winners for economics, Joseph Stiglitz and Paul Krugman, were not invited to the jobs conference. Oh, my God. Now, wouldn't we think, because I sure thought this, that a liberal Democratic president, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, like Barack Obama, would invite Krugman and Stiglitz, both Nobel Prize winners for economics, shouldn't they be invited to a jobs conference? Krugman writing in the New York Times, and Stiglitz writing wherever he gets published, occasionally in the Times as an op-ed piece, but Krugman certainly, what is he, once, twice a week, has offered solution after solution after solution, rational, not crazy Cato Institute crap, but I mean rational, workable solution after solution for some of these crises, these economic crises that we're dealing with. And as far as I know, nothing. I mean, why should anyone in the Obama administration pay any attention to Paul Krugman or Joseph Stiglitz? Why indeed, right? Do we have, will you find the report card music? Because at some point here, I would like to. Oh my goodness. Here we go.
As their father's hell did slowly go by, and feed them on your dreams.
The Kate Petrini in San Francisco is our educational affairs correspondent. She writes today, "Hi, Mike. I listened to last night's show during lunch today, right after teaching two classes and walking through a hallway filled with teenagers. That's why a remark you made really stood out to me. You said, quote, 'I doubt that there are many young American men or women sitting home tonight saying, I can't wait to get my hands on a gun and go kill these people in Afghanistan,' end quote. You were absolutely correct. When I asked my morning class, who heard or saw President Obama's speech last night, about five hands went up. I then asked, what was the speech about? And received a correct answer from a few additional students. However, only one of my students knew that the president had called for an additional 30,000 troops. She also knew that he had set a timetable, which almost made up for the fact that only five out of 30 of my kids even knew that the president had given a speech. Mike, most of these kids enthusiastically supported Obama when he was running for office, but like most Americans, they stopped paying attention after he was elected. The wars in Afghanistan and Iraq are totally irrelevant to them, and that's not their fault. The blame lies with the idiotic media and American society as a whole, which is ignorant of and apathetic to anything that doesn't affect us directly. As you've said many times on the program, these wars impact only a small percentage of Americans, many of whom got sucked in through the poverty draft that Mikey Weinstein referred to last night. For most of us, there is nothing to pique our interest in these conflicts anymore. The mission accomplished banners have been rolled up, and as time goes on, Afghanistan and Iraq become even more remote. In 2003, every one of my students knew the name Saddam Hussein, and all were aware of the war in Iraq. Back then, the Bush crime family had convinced us that it was critical to topple Hussein and told us that the U.S. would reap the glory of establishing democracy in Iraq. Today, 6 years later, only a handful of students are able to identify Saddam Hussein and the country he led. Meanwhile, President Obama tells us that 30,000 more troops are necessary to achieve, quote, peace with honor, end quote, in Afghanistan. Aside from the thousands of lives that will be lost in the coming months, there is another tragedy. The fact that except for people who have a loved one serving in the military, most Americans just don't care anymore.
Teach your children well, 'cause their father's hell did slowly go by. Feed them on your dreams, the one they fix, the one you know by. Don't you ever ask them why.
12 before the hour, 12 past the hour. Back to some phone calls here. Pat is in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. Hey, Pat.
Hello.
Hi, Pat.
Hi, Mike.
How are you?
I'm bad, great, thanks a lot. I just got a recent, edition of Nation. I think it's in November 30th edition. And
Pat, can you talk a little bit louder? You got the recent edition of the Nation magazine?
That's right, the November 30th edition of Nation. And there was a really interesting article, and I'm not sure if you have already talked about it in your show, but it basically talks about the title is How U.S. Funds the Taliban, and it's by Adam Ruston, and basically talks about the contract that awarded to Afghan contractor, particularly the company in question is, I think it's NCL, which happens to be the NCL holding, which basically the person who controls it is the son of one of the, I think it's called Barback, and he's the he's basically a young American, the son of the current defense minister in Afghanistan.
Right.
But this person basically, he's educated and raised in the U.S., and guess what? He was also a member of a think tank, conservative American Enterprise Institute.
We must have seen the same issue because, I read the same thing, which was, on the one hand, kind of surprising to me, on the other, not at all.
Well, basically, what happened is contract, and eventually the contract went up from $300 million to $4 billion, and he's basically responsible for transportation of all the goods to U.S. Army And the route that they obviously they take, one of the dangerous routes, involves dealing with Taliban. And ultimately what they do, some of the money that I guess the U.S. contract or defense Pentagon grants to this company, NCL Holdings,
mm-hmm.
they take the money and then they just go to Taliban and just say, you know what, we need a secure path to take the goods and all the whatever product we need to deliver to the mm-hmm. bases in various places. And they have to pay them a significant amount of money in millions, and they can get guaranteed safe passages.
Right.
And what happened to the money, basically Taliban takes the same amount, the same money and then funds the insurgency at other side of Afghanistan. They ultimately take that money and then use improvised explosive.
Right.
Explosive
and the point of the article was how the U.S. taxpayer is funding the resistance in Afghanistan against the U.S. Okay. military.
Exactly. So, wasn't it like technically what I'm trying, obviously you understand the article already, you're aware of that. What I'm trying to say that I'm coming from Canada, but I know for the fact there are some people in the States that are actually in jail or they have been put in a watch list simply because they just donated to a charity.
Right.
Ultimately, Homeland Security put them on a prohibited charity.
Yes.
They were basically charged with funding terrorism, and they had absolutely no idea. So their lives have been destroyed. Their record is destroyed. But we have a Pentagon which explicitly grants money to the NCL, which explicitly grants mm-hmm. and pays Taliban. So I just don't understand.
Well, you and a lot of people, Pat, trying to understand this system. Just like, how did Hamid Karzai become president of Afghanistan? He was a lobbyist or a consultant for Unocal Oil Company in this country. I don't think there's anything necessarily wrong with paying graft. The world runs on it, whether you call it vigorous or graft or payola or whatever. You know, the world runs on it. But should the graft be used to then construct these IEDs that will blow half of an American soldier away, and our medical people then save the half that's left and return them to civilian society? It's madness, Pat. That's the only answer I have for you. It's insanity. It's madness. And it's never going to stop. Thanks, Pat.
There's a story on TV. And the
Doing talk radio right from the left, it's More Mike Malloy.
It's 21 past the hour. Frank is in Chicago listening on XM. Hey, Frank.
Hey, Mike. How you doing tonight?
I'm all right. How you doing?
Hey, you know, I think what it is we all accuse Bill Clinton of being a, political triangulator.
Yeah.
And I think Barack Obama has just raised it to a new level here. Because, I mean, no matter what the policy issue is here, whether it's, health care or Afghanistan, financial re-regulation, well, we're going to split the baby,
And yeah.
It just, even that waste of skin George Bush, you say what you want. He was a Republican. He had a Republican agenda, and he used the Republicans in Congress to get it through. Democrats, bipartisanship, what's that?
Yeah, I don't get that either. And the Republicans are just waiting until they have the next turn at bat. And it'll be the Republican a method of governance, which is no dissent, no argument, shut up, do what we tell you to do from the top down. I sometimes wish that the Democratic Party was set up in the same way. But if it were, then it wouldn't be the Democratic Party, although it's not the Democratic Party anyway. So it really doesn't matter. Tra-la, tra-la. I see what you're saying.
Just like Jim Hightower's, the title of his one book, there's nothing in the middle of the road but a yellow line and dead armadillo.
Dead armadillos, that's right.
All right, thanks, Mike.
All right, Frank, take care. Drive safe. Drive safe. Joe in Cleveland wrote in last night, Mike, tonight on the way home from a job, an NPR commentator remarked that Obama had just delivered a command performance. a little over a week ago, about the time the president said we have to finish the job in Afghanistan, the local paper ran a blurb at earthweek.com. It said that 24% of children born at Fallujah General Hospital in Iraq died within 7 days. The article said, quote, three-quarters of them had deformities such as two heads, no head, a single eye, or missing limbs, end quote. Prior to the invasion, there was one infant death in 530, and only one had deformities. Doctors there blame depleted uranium weaponry. Finishing the job, as Obama put it, would be cleaning this radioactive mess up in Iraq and the landmines and unexploded ordnance in Afghanistan. Of course, not even a trace of a hint about anything of this nature in the speech of the Nobel Prize Peace Prize recipient. You can bet that many more thousands of tons of depleted uranium will be fired at the unfortunates in this escalated war. Joe from Cleveland. Reuters news agency also yesterday had the following regarding the stealthy killer that is likely to stalk Iraqis for years to come. Incidences of cancer, deformed babies, and other health problems have risen sharply. The contamination from the weapons used in years of war is a cause. An oncologist in Iraq's second city, Basra, said, quote, we have seen new kinds of cancer that were not recorded in Iraq before the war in 2003. Types of fibrous cancer and bone cancer. These refer clearly to radiation as a cause, end quote. In the city of Fallujah in western Iraq, scene of two of the fiercest battles between U.S. troops and insurgents after the 2003 U.S. invasion, a spike in the number of births of stillborn, deformed, and paralyzed babies has alarmed doctors. The use of depleted uranium in U.S. and coalition weaponry in the 1991 war and the 2003 invasion is well documented. Iraq medical facilities are limited, and keeping accurate health statistics during years of sectarian slaughter unleashed by the invasion was impossible. The spokesman for the Environment Ministry's Radiation Prevention Department said, quote, our information indicates there are more than 200 square kilometers of land south of Basra containing war debris, which is contaminated with depleted uranium. The proportion of children dying of cancer in Basra has jumped 65% in 1997 and another 60% in 2005, if you compare these 2 years to 1989. The British Ministry of Defense says, quote, there's no reliable scientific or medical evidence that links cancer to depleted uranium. Large quantities of DU were used in the first Gulf War, some of it near Basra. The U.S. military did use white phosphorus, which can cause serious burns if it comes in contact with skin. 5 years later, doctors in Fallujah are recording an unusual number of babies with congenital heart disease and neural tube defects, the latter involving abnormal spinal cord or brain development, which can cause paralysis and death. The manager of Fallujah's main hospital said, quote, the marked increase of congenital malformations of newborns in this hospital pushed the hospital's board of directors to form a special committee to investigate and record these cases. So now we're going to finish the job in Afghanistan.
He's
your nightly ammunition against right-wing rhetoric. Get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour, just finishing up this this report about the rise in incidents of kids in Iraq and Fallujah that are being born with these horrendous birth defects. A neuropediatric specialist who declined to be named said he was seeing on average three or four newborns with neural tube defects a week in Fallujah and the surrounding area, a region with a population of about 675,000 people. In Britain, the incidence of this condition is less than one birth in every thousand. Most births in and around Fallujah, are its main hospital, where up to 30 are recorded daily, roughly equating to a neural tube defect rate of 14 in every 1,000. A Fallujah doctor who declined to be named said, quote, some families decide to end the matter from the beginning. They choose to end the life of the child by refusing surgery for them. 90% of the children whom we don't treat die in the first year. Now, I don't know. I've said before on this program, and you already know this, that when you have that kind of amoral activity going on in some foreign country in the name of the United States of America, which is you and me, when that sort of thing is occurring, there is a, call it a karmic debt if you want to, or a spiritual deficiency, or a horrible abyss, or something that is manufactured evil. I don't believe in the inherency of evil, but manufactured evil. And I do believe that we can't manufacture evil without consequences that we may not even be able to imagine. I mean, if you just apply some basic principles of Newtonian physics, of action-reaction, you don't have to get all religious or all philosophical. Just apply some physics. And when I think about the fact that Barack Obama is now, you know, going to escalate, and you know as well as I do, we've if you're of a certain age, you've seen this movie before a couple of times, you know what this movie is. Somebody sent me a comparison, LBJ's speech when he ordered the escalation of troops in Vietnam in 65, 66. I've got it here in the stack somewhere. And the similarity of language, it's almost like the speech that Obama gave last night took into consideration, if not incorporated, words and phrases directly from Lyndon Johnson 42 years ago. It's shocking. But then when you realize that in all these instances, as somebody pointed out, as we pointed out many times, the only legitimate, if that's the right word, if you want to use the word legitimate in the same sentence as war, or as a modifier of war, the only legitimate war that we fought under the rules laid out by our Constitution was World War II. And ever since then, it's been these actions ordered up by the President of the United States, way beyond the power of granted under the Constitution. And it's amazing to me how the Congress can grant exemptions, can produce something like what we have now, the War Powers Act, that's never enforced. War Powers Act basically says that a commander-in-chief or a president has the power to order troops someplace, but within, I think it's 30 days, he has to go before Congress and make the case that his mobilization of these troops were necessary, proper, and involved the safety and security of the United States, at which point the Congress is supposed to go ahead and fund it. Or something like that. I don't know. If you know the real War Powers Act, you don't need to send it to me what it is. That works for me and that interpretation of it. But Obama, in ordering further violence, you think about how the right wing in this country, the Republicans and the Christians and the rightists, how they salivate, they slobber all over, metaphorically speaking, fetuses. They just slobber on them, don't they? Huh? And if a woman in this country, God forbid, wants to terminate a pregnancy because she has a right to do so under the law of the land and her own conscience and her own privacy, if she wants to terminate a pregnancy, some of these slobberers will follow her around on their hands and knees, wailing and weeping and making little mewling sounds. Well, where are you sons of bitches where it concerns what we have done in Iraq for the past decade and a half? Where are you? Where are you where it concerns what we're going to do to hundreds, if not thousands, of unborn, even unconceived in Afghanistan? Where are you? Where is your mewling theater now? Why not prevent it, you dumbasses? I am so sick of you people. You don't want... what do you think these births are? A gift from Jesus? It's just infuriating. So Barack Obama is going to increase not only his own, but ours too, the karmic debt that on some level, some way, somehow, is going to be paid. If it's more suicides by our own troops when they come home or in the field, okay. If it is a sense of angst and weirdness and free-floating anxiety that just ripples through this society, we don't know which way's up, we don't know what way to go, we stand around with our one thumb in our nose, the other up our rear ends, trying to figure out, oh, what happened, what happened, what happened? Well, this is what's happened. This is where it comes from. Are you kidding me? I mean, come on, you don't have to be a philosopher. I damn sure am not. You don't have to be a philosopher to figure this stuff out. We can't keep doing this! We just can't. Who in this society draws a direct line from births of headless babies in Fallujah to our activities there 3-4 years ago? Who draws the direct line? Who stands up? Why didn't Obama say that last night? Why doesn't anybody? It's the truth. But as Colonel What's-His-Name said in A Few Good Men, you can't handle the truth. This is the part that scares me. I was going through some boxes I mentioned the other night. We've been cleaning out the attic. And I've got boxes up there, photographs, tons of old photographs that were given to me by my mother and my grandparents, all of whom are dead now. But there, I have two uncles who, I see these pictures of my two uncles coming home from World War II, both in uniform. One was a CO who served his time at a hospital in France. The other was a platoon sergeant, combat hardened army dude. One went absolutely stark raving mad when he came back. My mother said it was called shell shock. The other was okay, but I'm looking at these pictures and I'm trying to reconcile what they did with what's occurring now. You know, my uncle that was a conscientious objector was very religious. He was a fundamentalist Christian. And he simply would not take a weapon to kill someone. He just wouldn't. I mean, not to be trite, but it was against his religion. So, but you had to serve. So they put him in a field hospital, in a medical center, handling the wounded, American wounded, French wounded, whoever, Allied wounded, and it made him crazy. And when he came home, what is now called PTSD, and back then was called shell shock, he went completely bonkers. And he was never institutionalized, but he had visions, and you know, he saw scenes from the ORs they had back then, and Jesus walking among the dead and the wounded and the bleeding. And, I mean, really weird stuff. When I was a kid growing up, I used to, in a very bizarre way, in a kid way, get fascinated with listening to my uncle tell me these visions and what he saw. And later, when I saw the movie Jacob's Ladder, I thought, oh, my God, this is what my uncle told me about. It is 10 before the hour. Arnold is listening in Durham, North Carolina. Hey, Arnold.
Hey, Mike Malone. How you doing, boss?
I'm all right. How are you?
Oh, man. You said something like you said to be a Democrat.
Yeah. Yeah.
A big D Democrat that you've been all your life, like I was all my life, you know. And to be worse, you grew up in the North and then moved South and carry that same title. It's a tough thing to do, man.
Sure it is, especially when the Democratic Party has been doing what it's been doing.
Oh, you know what? To be a Democrat now in this century, 2000, 2004, 2008, 2000, now, it's just like when the British surrendered at Yorktown and their Fife and Bugle Corps played that Child's Nursery Rhyme, "The World Turned Upside Down."
Yeah.
That's what it used to be.
Yeah, that's...
But, you know, listen to Barack Obama's speech last night. I turned the thing off. Mm-hmm. I was listening to it kind of eerie-like, but when he started mentioning 9/11, I just got sick. I wanted to throw the radio out the window, man. I was just... So
yeah, that was really shocking to me. It may be true that the Saudis were providing money for these training camps, but that was then. This is now. There's no Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan. I've been reading. They've all moved to the Horn of Africa. They're in Somalia. They're in what's left of Ethiopia or Eritrea. They're in, you know, I don't know where they are, but they're damn sure not. They might be in Pakistan.
He's definitely not going to pay attention to that because he has no ties to those nations. Well, he has nothing in his blood to say, let's go there and find out what's going on. No, not him.
I'm just sick of it, you know? I mean, ever since I was born, there has been war. You too.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'd like to be alive a little bit before I die where there is no war that my country or my military is involved in, where there just is no war. And I, you know, just give me a week. You know, just give me a little bit of that before I check out, you know?
Yeah.
Just a little. I like to see what it feels like, Arnold.
I mean, you know what you said about those children and those nations that you were talking about?
Right, right.
Suffering from this effect of this armament that we have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, if you were an 8-year-old or 6-year-old living there, you're witnessing all this. And when you become 16, you're going to become a terrorist. You're going to want to strike at the United States.
Well, sure.
You know, when you see those drones drop their ammunition and tear up people's houses and miss the target completely and kill your whole family, you're going to want to become a terrorist.
Well, yeah, you know, the perspective, the difference in perspective is like 180 degrees. You know, we've had a couple of presidents now tell us that we've got to go do this because of the security of the United States. And the people on the receiving end of these bombs and this white phosphorus and the depleted uranium and the cancer, you know, I can imagine they're sitting there thinking, you're doing this to protect your country. You're killing my children. You're screwing up the whole genetic structure of my body so that if I and my spouse get pregnant, we're going to give birth to a two-headed baby that's got cancer. Yeah, you know what the answer to that is, Arnold? The answer to that is from these people is God damn you, America. God damn you for all eternity, America, for what you're doing. And you and I, Arnold, our America.
That's right.
Man, I gotta go.
We'll see you guys.
All right, take it easy, Aaron. You know, I guess that's the part that just, you know, it truly really is unbearable if you think about it. And that's why we don't think about it. That's why we don't think about it. The only time I think about it is when I do this radio program. And I think to myself, Jesus, you know, the 37 or 40 or 50 people who listen to your show every night, you know, they probably don't think about this stuff up front, their frontal lobes, until you bring it up. Why do you bring it up? I don't know why I bring it up. I guess I bring it up for the same reason I bring up anything on this program. And that is because it's something that concerns me, and because I've considered myself fairly common, I know it considers most of my 40 listeners, if not all of them. But it's hard to deal with. One of my refuges is my non-belief in any kind of religious structure. You know, I don't know how people who consider themselves to be religious in this kind of, I'm talking about mostly Christians now. How can Christians in this country support this on any level? I'm not talking about the crazy ones who want all the death so that Jesus will be happy. Those people are psychopaths, sociopaths, mad. They're crazy. And if there was a Jesus, he did come back, he'd snap their heads off and kick them all into hell. I'm talking about just mainstream Christians who believe Christian ideology or the structure of their religion. How do you do that? How do you support the exporting of this death and destruction and disfigurement and child murder and baby killing and how? And still pray to your God or to your Savior and say, oh, thank you, Jesus. Thank you, Jesus. You know, I hear that a lot. If I'm going past a church or I'm watching a religious show on television, which I occasionally do, thank you, Jesus. Thank you, Jesus. If I were a Christian, I would never even mention Jesus' name. I would run and hide. But you know what happens when, you know, if you're a Christian, you know what your holy book tells you happens if you try to run and hide. You can't run and hide. So, I don't get it. I don't get it. You know, I hear all these people tell me this is a Christian nation. Oh, yeah? Really? Well, how do you... Christian means of Christ. Who would Jesus bomb? Oh, wait a minute. That's a bumper sticker. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.